I'm now joined by Will Rhine, founder and CEO of Granite Shares, who currently offers 5 ETFs. And earlier this year, they crossed over a significant milestone, over $1 billion in total assets. They're actually now around $1.5 billion, to be exact. And that includes the Granite Shares Gold Trust, ticker BAR, B-A-R, which itself is now well over $1 billion. They've done all this in a short 3 years, which is highly impressive. And Will is now on the line with me from New York. Will, always great connecting. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks, Nate. Good to talk to you. Good to be on the show again.
Well, first, how have you been doing over the past several months with everything going on?
I've been well, thank you. It's funny, I'm actually back in the office this week, which is the first time I've been in the office since March. So it's good to be back in a way. But strange to see kind of how New York's changed in such a kind of short period of time, I guess.
Well, I'm curious, you know, I've always viewed Granite Shares as being very entrepreneurial. I know you personally have always been very resourceful and grassroots. You like to get out and meet people. You've always done quite a bit of media. Has the work from home situation over the past 4 or 5 months created any specific challenges for you, or has it pretty much been business as usual, or has it created some advantages for a firm like yours?
I think it's created some advantages, to be honest. I mean, there's a number of things that, you know, I've personally learned, coming through this. I think one of the biggest taboos, to be honest with you, Nate, is that, you know, at the end of the day, both myself and my colleagues were all, you know, financial services professionals. We all, you know, grew up in large, you know, financial services firms. And therefore, from a cultural perspective, we've always been used to working in an office. Like, that's been the norm. That's been what we kind of accept culturally as being normal. And we never really embraced work from home, to be honest with you. And it was nothing to do with technology, because obviously we built our business in the cloud. From a technology perspective, we operate seamlessly whether we're in the office or not. But it was much more a cultural thing. And I think from that, it was frankly a fear that it would lead to less productivity with people being, you know, not in the office. And so I think one of my biggest takeaways has been, you know, just how productive, we've been outside of the office working from home. And indeed, you know, I might even say just from my own personal experience, I've worked harder in this particular period than perhaps, if I was in the office, because you cut out so many kind of unessential things like, you know, the meetings, the trips to the coffee machine, and, you know, even trips to see people. And so it's a lot more, I suppose, efficient from that perspective. So really the only thing that I haven't done is hire somebody. And that's kind of what led me to come back, because I hired my first person virtually. He started yesterday. So that's the reason I'm back in town.
Well, let's talk about a few Granite Shares ETFs. And I do want to start with the Granite Shares Gold Trust, ticker BAR. So as of this morning, gold is up about 30% on the year. I guess first, what's been your take on the price of gold?
Well, it's risen pretty quickly. And I guess the only reason I'm saying that is because the rise in the price of gold to the new all-time high has been achieved a lot quicker than I think the market expected. Indeed, in self-confession, at least I expected. Particularly after the experience of 2008, where it took 3 years to get to the all-time high after the 2008 debacle. So I did think that, we would achieve a new all-time high in gold. I did think that, but I've been quite surprised at how quickly that's happened. And I suppose it's really sort of the extent or the magnitude of the response to what's happened, which has really left, you know, people looking for alternatives. Certainly the stocks and bonds, and also driven the demand for gold.
So in terms of some potential drivers moving forward, given what you just said, I mean, what will you be looking for? Is it if we get additional government stimulus, if we have the Fed continue to pump liquidity into the market, what are going to be the drivers here?
Yeah, I mean, what's going on here, Nate, is, you know, a similar playbook to what went on in 2008, which is governments now have realized that when you have a crisis in the economy, the best or the most palatable political solution is to print money in order to provide that stopgap. And, you know, that is really now, you know, remember back in 2008, I mean, a lot of people will forget there was something called the Tea Party. And at least on the Republican side, Republicans were more broadly against stimulus than in favor of it. You know, that's completely switched around now. So people think of, you know, the Democratic Party back in 2008 as being the ones that were, of course, in favor of stimulus. But now it doesn't matter. Both sides of the aisle has accepted that stimulus is really the solution. And what that does, it affects a big wealth transfer, a kind of a silent wealth transfer, if you will, from savers to debtors. And, of course, with so much debt in the economy, you know, that's now being viewed by both, you know, political parties as the most palatable way to affect that transfer. And so the net result of all of that, in my view, would be a debasement of the U.S. dollar. And that's really kind of the primary thing that's happening with gold. There'll be other things along the line. Inflation expectations already are picking up. You know, real interest rates on their way down. But, you know, the main thing, I think, is this transfer of wealth from savers to debtors, which will affect the dollar.
With the price of gold rising so quickly, we are now seeing record flows into physical gold ETFs, including your ETF, BAR. And there is some debate about whether or not the ETF flows are driving the price or vice versa. We'll leave that for another time. I have some strong views on that. But have you been surprised by the demand for gold ETFs, or does it all make sense to you, given everything that, you just described?
I haven't been that surprised. I mean, I guess, you know, if you go back, you know, I was at the last gold high, and, you know, remember, people will forget that there was a brief moment in time in 2011 when, you know, GLD, which is still the largest gold ETF today, briefly eclipsed the SPDR, the S&P 500 ETF, as the largest ETF in the world. And that happened for a few days. And, you know, again, people will forget that that actually happened. But, you know, there is significant demand for gold, I guess that's my point, when you get to these sorts of situations where there's an imminent crisis in the market and people are looking for alternatives to stocks and bonds. I think what's different this time, Nate, is that I think it's the bond market which is kind of most vulnerable at this time, with interest rates at zero and obviously real rates negative, that, you know, people are really looking for something other than bonds, or at least to perhaps lessen or lighten their bond allocations in the portfolio. And I think gold will be a beneficiary of that. I'm not saying it's the exclusive beneficiary, but I think it's definitely a beneficiary. And that's what you're going to see in terms of more flows into gold.
Will, I've mentioned this several times on the podcast in the past, but the physical gold ETF space is really interesting to me because there are a number of products that have been successful, including yours. And I feel like in other segments of the ETF market, you'll often see a winner-take-all, right, or maybe one or two ETFs survive in a category, I think especially in the thematic ETF space. Why is there room here for multiple gold ETFs to have success?
I think the short answer, Nate, is that it's just a huge category. And, you know, it's sort of like saying, you know, why are there multiple ETFs in large cap equities, in that it's just a massive category. And so when you have that amount of money in any given asset class, I think you have opportunities to gather assets. Now, the gold ETF market, or the gold ETF space, I suppose, is somewhat different in the sense that the products are so similar. You know, in large cap equity space, you could have, you know, products that track a market capitalization weighted index, or a equally weighted index, or be factor weighted. But really, gold is just gold. Gold is gold is gold is gold. And so if you have a gold ETF, really, there are very few ways to differentiate that would be meaningful other than the price. And so what we've tried to do with BAR is to really make our ETF the most compelling from a low-cost perspective. And that's sort of working for us so far.
All right, before we move on, you mentioned some investors perhaps lightening up on fixed income and moving some of that allocation to gold. How do you view gold in a portfolio? Obviously, every investor has their own unique situation, but just in general, how do you think gold should be used?
So I've always thought that, you know, gold should be used as a risk management tool in a portfolio. In other words, you're never going to own, it's never going to be the majority of the weight in your portfolio. In other words, most people are still going to have, even in these times, predominantly weighted towards equities and fixed income. So from that perspective, you know, you can't view gold as being the main driver of return. So therefore, it has to be viewed in the context of a diversified portfolio. In other words, risk-adjusted returns. I think that's really the power of gold. You know, we've run studies, and you know, people feel free to reach out to us directly for more information on these studies. But we've run studies with all sorts of, you know, simulations in terms of gold in the portfolio. And the fact is that gold in a portfolio in a 60-40 traditional equity and fixed income improves the risk-adjusted return in almost all scenarios. In other words, a very small weighting of gold, like something like 2%, to a very, very large weighting of gold, i.e. 35%, almost replacing your fixed income allocation entirely. And so I think from a risk-adjusted return basis, that's really the power of gold in a portfolio. It improves, or can help improve, risk-adjusted returns.
Okay, let's switch gears and talk about this Granite Shares X-Out U.S. Large Cap ETF, ticker symbol X-Out. So earlier this year, this actually won ETF.com's Best New Smart Beta ETF for 2019, and it is backing that up with performance. So I checked yesterday, it's beating the S&P 500 by about 7% year-to-date and has outperformed since inception. Do you want to briefly explain what this ETF does and what's driving that performance?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a totally new concept, Nate. And really what we've tried to do with X-Out is, obviously the large cap U.S. equity space is an incredibly difficult space to launch something innovative. And so what X-Out does is, you know, focus on the two states of the asset management industry. One is traditional active management. In other words, the philosophy of picking winners. So it's, I can pick the right companies and then I will outperform the benchmark index over time. And then you have, you know, what's by and large accepted as the sort of the ETF philosophy, which is, well, I know that picking winners doesn't work, so therefore the only thing I can do is hold the market and I just buy the average and accept that I will underperform every year, you know, after fees and taxes. And what X-Out does is actually say, well, you know what, how about we flip this investment paradigm? Instead of focusing on winners, is there actually alpha to be harvested by excluding losers? In other words, we know that in terms of the broad market indices, it's only a few companies that are really driving the majority of these benchmark returns. So put simply, there must be a lot of companies that are actually detracting from those returns and are destroying value in the broader market. So if we leave them out, then all things being equal, have we created a portfolio that can outperform and is a better core, you know, holding for a portfolio? And that's what X-Out does. It focuses on X-ing out or excluding losers as opposed to picking winners.
In just high level, how are you identifying those losers?
So we have seven fundamental metrics that we look at. And as you rightly said, I mean, this ETF won the best factor of Smart Beta ETF, last year from ETF.com. And that's because we look at a number of different factors where we score each company in the market. We take the 500 largest in the U.S. market, and we score all those from 1 to 5, 5 being the highest score and 1 being the lowest. And we exclude 250 names with the lowest score. So we literally take 500 companies, get rid of half that have the lowest score, and that's the portfolio that we're left with.
Do you have an example or two this year? I'm just curious, when you talk about the performance and what the drivers have been, can you offer an example either on the positive side, companies that you've included that have helped drive performance, or on the negative side, companies that you have excluded that have you know, led to that outperformance?
No, absolutely. The best examples, Nate, and this is, again, the power of X-Out, it's nothing to do with what you own. Maybe the more important thing is what you leave out of your portfolio than what you put in. So what we own in the portfolio will be highly correlated with the market. Indeed, X-Out has a beta to the S&P 500 of slightly less than 1. So in other words, it's slightly less risky than the broad market. So you get a correlation that is 1-to-1 with the main market. But the alpha is generated by excluding those companies that we view, the model views, as vulnerable to disruption going forward. So some examples of those, you know, we excluded J.P. Morgan, for example. And we excluded J.P. Morgan a couple of quarters ago. X-Out rebalances every quarter, where we take companies in or exclude companies. We have a list of top 10 X-Outs, which we publish, obviously, on a quarterly basis, and we go through the logic for why we exclude companies. And we excluded JP Morgan because the deposit growth when the company was slowing down, and also buybacks, which is something that we look at, were being funded out of borrowed money, not out of free cash flow. And, you know, one of those sort of two metrics, I suppose, in main contributed to a low score. We excluded JP Morgan and other financial services company. It wasn't just them, but they're the largest in the top 10X out. And obviously, coronavirus hit, and then it would be probably obvious to most people as why you probably didn't want to own banks or financial services company in an environment where interest rates were put to zero. And there was, you know, fear of an economic recession and or, you know, depression in the economy. So JP Morgan is a good example. Coca-Cola is also a good one. Indeed, companies like that, which, you know, have, you know, most people would view as being a strong brand. But again, we're not focused on what emotion says. We're focused on, you know, the numbers. And, you know, one of the things that we picked up about Coca-Cola was that it was just a company that couldn't really drive its earnings growth. And what happened during coronavirus was its reliance on physical distribution networks became incredibly vulnerable. In other words, when your main sort of, or one of your main, you know, capacities to distribute product is at, you know, bars, restaurants, sports venues, et cetera, and those get closed down, then it's probably not going to affect the stock that well. And that's indeed what's happened. And lastly, I'll say just about energy companies. You know, ExxonMobil has been the single largest destroyer of value in the Xout benchmark. And we've excluded Exxon for a while now. And, you know, by doing that, just alone, that one stock alone is added alpha to the index. And so, again, that's, you know, once upon a time was the most valuable company in America. But it's been a fairly sort of fairly tragic tale in terms of the decline of that company. And of course, with oil prices briefly going to zero within the corona crisis, people will be, perhaps will understand why probably doesn't make sense to own oil companies in this time.
Well, Will, with that, we're going to have to leave it there. I always enjoy chatting. Congratulations on all the success. I really love seeing it. Thank you for joining me this week.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on again.
That was Will Rhine, founder and CEO of Granite Shares.